The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, what is your history with horror movies and dating, horror movies and relationships?
Oh, it goes way back, because I remember my brother and I staying up late and watching Jack the Ripper. And I'm like six, maybe. And it made a huge impression on both of us. And I remember, even though he was older, he was like, you got to walk me down the hall. You got to look behind the shower curtain. And so I began to really have that feeling like something was out there lurking. But I got to say, in terms of dating, it wasn't like a 50s drive-in. I wasn't like, oh, let's go watch something. It wasn't like the beginning of the Thriller video, which I was like, oh, it's scary out here.
Well, interestingly enough, anytime my wife and I are trying to determine how long we've known each other, we have to look up the Saw movies on Internet Movie Database.
Yeah.
Not because the Saw movies are particularly near and dear to our heart.
Uh-huh.
The first one was okay in some respects, but it's not something I cherish. But shortly after we met each other, we went and saw the first Saw movie in the theater. So we know that if we can determine, for a while they were putting out one a year. So we knew that we could see which Saw movie they were on, and that would tell us how long we'd known each other. But now we have to do a little math, but we have to find that starting point by answering the question, when did the first Saw movie come out?
Wow. So that just shows, I think it's very reflective of your deep history with horror movies in that genre in general, because my husband and I would probably look at the Coen Brothers movies and be like, okay, which one was the one that we saw together that denotes the beginning of the relationship? But you, yes, that vast history of the genre.
Well, even though I certainly hold the Coen Brothers films far above most bits of horror that I've seen, but for some reason, a horror movie that I don't even particularly like all that much is the Signifier. But, you know, from an early age, I remember being hit over the head with that trope, though, of if you're going on a date, what do? You take the person to a movie. And generally, it needs to be a horror movie because you saw this, you see this in films, you see this in horror movies as well, especially the older ones that would come on, on TV in the middle of a Saturday. You'd see these old films, which would show people in the 1950s and 60s going to the drive-in, right? Going on dates and seeing a horror movie.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. This is something that is actually sort of woven into our cultural fabric, mm-hmm. and it's a rite of passage in a way. And so I love that you guys, that you and your wife's first date was a horror flick. Because we're going to talk about the ways in which it might influence our amorous feelings for others out there.
Yes, and leading to the big question, does this actually work as an aphrodisiac? Does the haunted house actually empty into the bedroom, et cetera? So we're going to back up just a little bit and talk about the effects of fear on the body, on the mind, because mm-hmm. at a very basic level, this should come as no surprise to anyone, we did not evolve to watch horror movies. We didn't. We evolved to deal with frightening and or dangerous stimuli, mm-hmm. but the horror movie in many cases stands as an example of supernormal stimuli, and it's also a simulation. So we have this unreal experience with fear mm-hmm. that plays on our minds and on our bodies in the same way that actual lethal threats do.
Right. So you have a tiger, which is an actual threat. And mm-hmm. at one point when humans were part of the food chain would have been a real problem. Right. And we have bodies that can respond to that. On the other hand, we have the paper tigers of our mind, which come to life in the form of movies. And sometimes the mind is like, hey, I can't distinguish between the two. So we should talk about what's happening in the mind. And we'll also get to who this might be affecting the most.
All right, so let's just run through what happens. You're in the movie, movie theater. And therefore you are in the movie in a sense. You're immersing yourself in the experience. You're watching these fearful sights. You're hearing fearful things. Maybe you're smelling something fearful. Depends on what kind of gimmick the theater is throwing at you. But for the most part, we're talking about your ears and your eyes. So horror is running into your ears and your eyes to an almond-shaped clump of neurons called the amygdala. This is located front and center in the brain, and it's vital to instantaneous emotional processing, especially, surprisingly enough, love and pleasure. So we've conducted in the past experiments on rats that have shown that damaging the amygdala interferes with their capacity to feel fear as well, mm-hmm. and this suggests an overlap between these seemingly opposite emotions of pleasure and fright. And we've touched on this before.
Yeah.
And we see this kind of dual purposing a lot because ultimately with the brain, some cases you can point to a certain region of the brain and say, well, this lines up with this. But in many cases we see double duty. You see that different areas are involved in the processing of different feelings, et cetera. So, it shouldn't come as any surprise that we see love and pleasure, we see fear and terror wound up in the same mechanisms.
Yeah, we talked before about how the amygdala processes pain, emotional pain and physical pain, mm-hmm. and that the two are just so bound up together. So again, there's no big surprise here that there's an overlap in pain and pleasure as well. So if you think about Freddy emerging from behind the door or that chainsaw getting closer and closer to your neck, mm-hmm. you think about your amygdala getting all juiced up, unleashing a brain and body energizing cocktail of hormones. Energizing, remember that, you know? And while all this is happening, you also have your prefrontal cortex getting in on the game and saying, it's okay, it is just a movie. And the result of that is a kind of wave of pleasure because you know that you're in this domain where you're not actually going to get hurt, and yet you have all those energizing hormones and chemicals flowing through you.
Yeah, all within about 3 seconds, your amygdala is unleashing this hormone cocktail. It's prompting an already busy adrenal glands to churn out cortisol, the stress hormone. And high levels of cortisol can impede insulin, causing a rise in blood sugar. A little extra fuel in case you need to punch something in the face or run away into the hills.
Right.
You're going to end up breathing faster. You're taking in more oxygen that way. Your heart is racing to get that oxygen to your muscles. Your appetite stalls because the energy your body would use for digestion is diverted towards getting away from the mass maniac in your mind, if not in real life. You're potentially starting to sweat, pupils are dilating, and the cortisol has saturated your bloodstream at this point and feeds back into the amygdala to boost the perception of danger. So in this way, you're reinforcing memory for the initial fright, so you may end up actually feeling a little jumpy afterwards. But anyway, all of this is hitting within 3 seconds, which really makes you look at the horror movie or any kind of artificial scare. In a way, it's kind of like a drug. It's this artificial stimuli that we take in, and it causes these physical responses.
Yeah, and one of the more counterintuitive findings in the science of fear is that the stronger the negative emotions, so we're talking about like anxiety and worry and fear, the more the person will enjoy that movie, that bit of horror in front of them. And that's where you see that the distress and delight really are interconnected, because it is intrinsically a cathartic moment for the person.
Indeed. And another big thing to point out here is that within 5 seconds of bringing in this fearful stimuli, your nerve cells start to release endorphins to combat the injuries that you have probably sustained from the axe-wielding maniac on the screen.
Yeah.
And so your brain is also releasing dopamine, the neurotransmitter best known for, you know, giving you that feel-good rush, and also a property, a neurotransmitter that we bring up a lot on the podcast, because it's one of those key substances that plays a role in so many different emotional responses to the world.
Yeah, and that reminds me too, you have mirror neurons in on the game as well.
Yes.
We've talked about that before, the mirror neurons that are essentially aping what they see in front of us in our brains. So I always think about this with A Clockwork Orange, that the moment in which his eyes are being peeled back, I will instinctively, you know, cover my eye and try to prevent it because it feels like it's happening to me.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's a bad horror movie with poorly defined characters, we can't help but invest a little of ourselves in that character. And then all the more so if they actually bothered to develop the character and or have somebody, you know, competent play that character and bring them to life on the screen. And the eye thing is interesting too to note, because when you see a film that just has injuries that consists of, say, arms getting chopped off and heads getting chopped off, I mean, that kind of gore can certainly have an effect. But so often it's those little moments that make the most sense to us and touch us the most. The character scraping their hand or you know, something jabs into their side, or they step on some glass. Those little injuries that are far more relatable, because for the most part, you and I cannot relate to an individual getting their arm chopped off or their head chopped off. It's you know, it's a real world injury, but it's not something that we can say, it's not necessarily wince worthy, but it's those little injuries that we can relate to, and those, and when, the more we relate to what's going on the screen, the more we can immerse ourselves in what's happening.
Yeah, that's why the idea of something like, say, a needle going into your eye is so horrific, because all of us have probably at one point or another had a needle pierce our skin, so we are familiar with that. But then you think
or
about
even
something
poked in the eye. So like the immediate danger to the eye is not something that's beyond the scope.
Yeah, and you pair that with the vulnerability of the eye, and it just becomes like this terrible thing that you can't even imagine, but you can't imagine. So
there you go. That's our next science on the web. We'll just deal with one that only has clips from horror movies in which injuries are done to eyes.
I know. If you guys thought that earwax footage of that, what looked like to be like a sticky croissant being pulled out of a ear was terrible, then, you know, you just imagine this next video.
Who is the really artsy filmmaker who did the scene with the razor blade in the eye that was...
Oh, I don't know. But did you see? I just...
So just to summarize again, you can think of the horror movie experience or even the haunted attraction experience as a drug. So bear that in mind when we're talking about people on a date partaking of the horror movie. If you're one person asking another person out on a date to a horror movie, you're basically saying, hey, do this drug with me, this drug that will have this physical, emotional effect on me and you.
Right, and we'll both experience this together. There'll be this communal aspect, and we'll both survive it together.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll come out on the other end.
And if you frame it that way when you ask somebody on a date, then I don't know, it depends on the individual. They might be more inclined to say yes, but they might be more inclined to say no and never speak to you again. But that is what the proposition actually is when someone says, hey, I know you're in my my physics class and we haven't really talked, but why don't you go watch the new Friday the 13th movie with me?
Let's metaphorically survive this together.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I might go. All right, so who might be watching these kinds of movies the most? Well, we've talked about the type T personality before. We're talking about the neophiliacs who crave new experiences. They get more of a jolt, and they release more dopamine. So it would follow that perhaps a type T personality would be more amenable to getting the pants scared off of them.
Yeah, someone who just goes into the theater and says, just push my boundaries, push my buttons. You know, they're not worried about any of their triggers being pulled on a particular movie. If anything, they want their triggers pulled. They want all the triggers possible to be pulled.
Yeah, they were like, I just jumped off a plane today. Bring it on.
Yeah.
What you got?
And it's often hard to relate to people like that when it comes to movies, to fiction, written fiction even, because they seem to have at times drastically different expectations of the subject matter, you know? But anyway, that's another digression.
For another time, I think. Now, who else might be juiced up by this? Teens and 20-somethings.
Which flows in nicely with the trope of the teenagers going to the drive-in theater and watching something scary and winding up arm in arm and lip in lip.
Yep.
At least.
Lip in lip. I like that. Fear research expert, Edward Campbell says that older people have stimulation fatigue. Like, for instance, you have these real horrors of life scaring you. There are things that are actual real threats.
Mm-hmm.
When you get older, like, you know, there's looming death. That's always unpleasant.
Well, and also you're just more aware of what's going on in the world. I mean, like, I feel like I see a trailer for a film, especially a horror film that has to do with home invasion.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not going to see that. If I want to get frightened about the possibility of home invasion, you know, I'll just sit in my house and listen to the news or something. Like, that doesn't take me out of my own experience.
I know. My brother keeps saying, you got to watch Cabin in the Woods. You got to watch The Strangers. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want to, because I like to go to the mountains in a cabin a lot. And I don't want to now freight my experience there with these paper tigers.
Oh, well, Cabin in the Woods, you should maybe see. Just know that there's a lot more going on than meets the eye. It's not just a Cabin in the Woods film. It really plays with that trope a lot and ultimately goes into a more fantastic area.
All right. Well, both of you have really great judgment when it comes to media, so I'm obviously going to have to see this now. Although you promise this will not ruin my experience in the mountains.
Unless you're going to a really weird mountain, I think you'll be fine.
Okay. All right. So anyway, it would make sense that older people are like, you know what? I don't need this necessarily. I don't find it as entertaining as I used to because, you know, when I was a young buck of 16, I was more likely to look for really intense experiences.
Yeah. I mean, just physically, you get older and you're maybe not up for the adrenaline pumping roller coaster ride of a horror film. It's just, you just don't want to feel it in your body.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite there yet, but I've certainly heard people make that argument. They say, oh, I just can't do it. It just makes my heart race. I just don't want to go through it. And I can understand that, especially again, when you think of the horror movie, the artificial fear experience as a full body event.
Yeah. It's funny. I think I've mentioned this before, but before the birth of my daughter, I could watch anything and it really wasn't that difficult for me to watch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I could very much say, this is the willing suspension of disbelief. It's not real, so on and so forth. But after I had her, I was, everything was sort of like, ugh, this is difficult to watch.
Yeah.
Including horror movies. So I've come out of that a bit, but it's not the same anymore.
And it's also not the same for the people who make it, obviously, either. I remember reading an interview with Clive Barker where he was talking about looking back at some of his younger writings and about how, you know, now as an older man who's known people who has died, you know, death has become more a part of his reality.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, looking back on his view of death in his earlier horror films, he says, you know, sometimes it's harder to relate to that. It just seems it is a different person.
Indeed. All right. So it's not just me out there having a different perspective on this. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we are going to talk about the thematic power of these movies.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astepro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can get Astepro and go today. AsteproAllergy.com. Astepro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
All right, we are back, and you know all that snack talk reminded me that we are actually going to talk about products that eat during scary movies. But before we do that, let's talk about the thematic power of scary movies.
Yeah, because that's another huge thing to think about, because as always, with humans, there's this sort of animal level. There's the I'm seeing something scary, and then I'm bodily responding to it. But of course, horror movies have a lot of baggage with them as well. Like even a bad horror movie is generally coming to you on the backbones of long-standing tropes, long-standing folktales, long-standing cultural fears. I mean, it's a complex. There's a complex undercurrent there, even if the director or actors or whoever responsible for this piece don't really have a clue what they're doing.
Yeah, I feel like writers and directors are tapping into these very ancient stories that we have been telling each other as cautionary tales. So you begin to see, obviously, the tropes pop up again and again.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why I probably enjoy bad horror movies and bad genre films as much, if not more, than good ones, because you do see these accidents of genius. There'll be a bad film, and like somehow they'll have like a perfect scene, and or the monster will somehow connect on a level that is just out of keeping with the rest of the film, because they'll accidentally at times get it right. They'll tap into these at times primal feelings.
Now, I should also say that when we talk about this, we're talking about a very sort of heteronorm situation going on here that horror movies appeal to. So let's say, for instance, that you're watching a movie and all the guys in it generally are cads, right? There's no sort of knight in shining armor. Mm-hmm. There is this idea, according to the site Killer Film, that might put your male date attendee in a really good light. So, for instance, you could be watching all of this terrible sort of things unfold in front of you, and you might have this guy next to you who just took $20 out of your wallet, but you don't have to worry about him hopefully gutting you like a fish later.
Yeah, it's true. We were looking at an article, How Watching Horror Movies on Dates Can Help You Score, by Serena Whitney at Killer Film. And she does bring up a number of interesting points, again, in a very heteronormal sense here. But yeah, you're watching a horror film. All of the men are horrible, even the ones that aren't bearing machetes. And then oftentimes there is at least this misguided attempt to have a strong female, because you have that lone survivor, that one female that makes it to the end of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, the character development is generally not going to be there. It's not going to be the kind of character that feminist essays are written about for years and years and years. But there's an idea of female strength and male lacking there.
Yeah, I was thinking even in the Scream films, or at least the first one, mm-hmm. the male that is supposed to be the one who is sensitive and perhaps the hero turns out to be actually the perp.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you can find examples of these all day long.
Yeah. Okay. Some of your more interesting films are aware of these tropes and then begin to play with them on some level or another. So yeah.
Yeah. All right. Then you also get this kind of like symbolism that's couched in there. So if you look at a movie like Predator or even the Alien franchise, mm-hmm. what do you see? You see these creatures who have, there's no sensitive way to say this. They have these genitalia-like looking creatures mm-hmm. that evoke the idea of vagina dentata.
Mm-hmm.
Now, vagina dentata, I feel like we've probably mentioned here a couple of times, is the idea that a vagina might have teeth and attack you. And it's this very sort of grotesque rendering of the female body, and it taps into this fear of females and this rendering of females as monsters, as unholy and evil. And so it's interesting that in horror movies, you'll see some of this embedded.
Yeah, the monstrous feminine plays a huge role in more horror films than we could count, more horror properties and more horror tales. So yeah, when you're going into a film, you're encountering the monstrous. The monstrous always has some level of symbolic power, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're involving the animal and the hybrid coming together, and that ends up having some sort of symbolic meaning that you end up deciphering on some level or another. And then when you throw in all of this, yonic or phallic symbolism, then suddenly there's gender politics, there's sexual issues at play.
Mm-hmm.
Again, oftentimes just going on completely under the surface of the film, and maybe the filmmakers themselves were not even aware of the symbols they were playing with.
Which I feel like plays into this idea of hey, hussy watching. You know that you're a hussy. So why don't you just, you know, submit to it? I mean, obviously they're not really coming out and saying it, but there are those undertones there, which then are compounded by the fact that most scary movies have a ton of actual sex going on.
Yeah, it's generally a great place to throw in your gratuitous nudity. And really, I mean, I remember as far as like seeing nudity on film, like all the earliest examples of it, I feel like were in horror films. Or even like not even quite nudity, but just semi-nude bodies.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like that scene in Alien with the underwear. So that in and of itself is kind of a conflicting area where you end up having your early ideas about sexuality are partially molded by films that are also full of bloodshed and problematic displays of sexuality and or gender, and along with poor character development. But at the very least, there's a very good possibility that when you go in to see a horror film, there's also going to be a little bit of skin.
Yeah, and I think that's riding on the coattails of what we talked about before, which is a certain amount of vulnerability wrapped up in nudity, which we've talked about before. I'm even thinking about this. Have you ever seen the 1970s French film called The Beast?
No, but I've always wanted to, because the VHS cover always calls out to me when I go to Videodrome, the mecca of VHS and DVD rental here in Atlanta, because you see that bestial hand reaching after a woman's bottom Or is it just her flesh? I can't remember.
I can't remember the cover art for it. But what I came away from that is that, you know, there's this beast, you know, stalking this woman in the forest. And she's naked a lot of the time. And so it really comes down to sort of the rudimentary brass tacks of horror. You've got your vulnerability. You've got this creature that's after you. And you're in the woods. You're in unfamiliar territory being stalked.
Now, I also want to throw in that that Sigmund Freud, of course, suggested that horror was appealing because it traffics in thoughts and feelings that have been repressed by the ego, but which seem vaguely familiar. So, again, all of these symbolic ideas are embedded in the meat of the horror, even if the creators were not aware of it. And when you play with the monster, when you're playing with images of the monstrous, you end up playing with weird alignments of these symbols. I want to read a quick passage here from Monster Culture by Jeffrey Jerome Cohen. It's one of the essays in Speaking of Monsters, which is a collection of wonderful essays about monsters in film, monsters in fiction, monsters in culture in general, and what they mean. I recommend checking that book out if this is at all your thing. But anyway, Cohen says, "The monster is continually linked to forbidden practices in order to normalize and to enforce. The monster also attracts. The same creatures who terrify and interdict can evoke potent escapist fantasies. The linking of monstrosity with the forbidden makes the monster all the more appealing as a temporary egress from constraint. The simultaneous repulsion and attraction at the core of the monster's composition accounts greatly for its continued cultural popularity, for the fact that the monster seldom can be contained in a simple binary dialectic. We distrust and loathe the monster at the same time we envy its freedom and perhaps its sublime despair. The habitations of monsters are more than dark regions of uncertain danger. They are also realms of happy fantasy, horizons of liberation. Their monsters serve as secondary bodies through which the possibilities of other genders, other sexual practices, and other social customs can be explored."
And, you know, right before we started the podcast, we were talking about literary criticism, and we were talking about Jacques Lacan and Derrida, who both took on language as saying it is a coda. Mm-hmm. For the rules of how we behave in society or the ideas that we have. And it's heavily patriarchal. So it's interesting to think about that, the way that we are forming the symbols, which is part of language, to inform the actual story unfolding before us.
Indeed.
All right. So we have this idea that we have these really powerful themes. And we have these mirror neurons working in our brains. We're responding to this chemical cocktail inside of us, and perhaps we inch closer together in a symbolic act of defending ourselves from the terror before us on the screen. Is there any evidence that watching scary movies can increase acts of humping?
Well, that's the big question, right? And fortunately, we do have a pretty key study that shed some light on this. It doesn't necessarily answer all the questions, but it continues to stand as a pivotal study into this question. In this, we're talking about the misattribution of arousal, which is the process whereby people make a mistake in assuming what is causing them to feel aroused. And it all comes down to this article, Heightened Sexual Attraction Under Conditions of High Anxiety. And this was a 1974 study by psychologist Donald Dutton and Arthur Aron. And it all has to do with, in what is in a sense kind of a physical manifestation of a horror movie, a dangly bridge, suspension bridge.
Yeah, and it's sometimes known as the Capilano suspension bridge experiment because they had 85 males between the ages of 18 and 35 who would walk across one of two bridges over the Capilano River in Vancouver, Canada. And afterwards, they were interviewed.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit more layered than that.
Yeah. So you had the two bridges. One is definitely the scary bridge, the horror movie bridge. 5 foot wide, 450-foot long bridge, construction of wooden boards attached to wire cables. Perhaps you've walked on one of these before, but...
Oh, I can't stand when they sway and they wobble.
Yeah. And then it's hard enough when you're alone, but then inevitably there's going to be some jerkwad's going to come onto the bridge right behind you and start jumping around and
some type T.
Yeah, and then and and you're starting to freak out, and then you end up crawling across the rest of it. I mean, basically the rope bridge in the second Indiana Jones movie. You know, that's the experience.
Okay.
So some people use that bridge. Other people, though, that were going across the control bridge, which was a solid wood bridge that was a little further upriver, and this was constructed of heavy cedar. It's not going anywhere. Nobody's jumping on this thing to make it sway around. It's solid. So they both groups cross the bridges, and at the other end of the bridge, they're interviewed by a female conducting a survey, giving them all these questions they have to answer. The guys who'd crossed the scary bridge filled out their questionnaires with stronger sexual imagery than the men who'd crossed the safe bridge.
Now, this is where it gets very interesting. Both groups were given a number where they could reach the female assistant in case they required any clarification on the surveys that they took, which would obviously give them a chance to follow up with her, right? The guys on the suspension bridge were 5 times as likely to call her the next day. So what's the idea here? I mean, what's going on?
Well, the idea is that your body is aroused by the terror. You know, we're talking about just basic physical arousal. Again, you know, think back to what we were talking about with your heart is racing, you're breathing faster, and you have all this dopamine rushing through your system. You're feeling all of that, and then you're encountering this member of the opposite sex, and you end up misattributing the cause of that arousal mm-hmm. to the woman instead of the scary bridge. And this is, of course, all this has to do as well, supposedly, with the chemical dopamine, which is gushing out when you feel that first rush of attraction or terror. Again, it comes back to the dual nature, and the shared machinery for these positive and negative emotions.
Yeah, because it's funny, even though there is an uptick in dopamine, it's not like a gushing uptick. There is the feeling that it's gushing, and you're gushing, and you feel emboldened by this. So mm-hmm. it makes sense that the men were more likely to call because they're looking at this experience and thinking about it. Now, there was another, I wouldn't say it was an experiment because it was on ABC's Catalyst program. Mm-hmm. There was an episode called The Science of Dating, How to Catch a Mate, in which the suspension bridge experiment was reversed. They had 2 groups of women who were tested to see if the same thing would happen. So the reporter on this, Dr. Paul Willis, recruited 6 women to ride what he called the terrifying new Superman roller coaster.
Okay.
And then another 6 to go on Marvin the Martian's rocket, which Marvin the Martian is like a kiddie ride. There's nothing thrilling or scary about it.
It sounds pretty fun. I would probably prefer that one.
It does have sort of an adorable quality to it. I think I would ride both, actually. So what happened next is that Willis hits on all the women on camera. So obviously there's some amusing stuff going on there. Now, 5 of the 6 women who rode the roller coaster were up for a drink after filming. Good for you, Dr. Willis. While only 2 of the Marvin the Martian women accepted his invitation. Moreover, when they filled out a survey, they used language, the women on the roller coaster, that was much more sexually charged than Marvin the Martian.
Now, that's not to say that there are not some potential holes in this article. It's been brought up by critics over the years that some of this doesn't hold up as well when you reverse the genders, when mm-hmm. you start trying to replicate the exact results. In particular, we were looking at an article titled Attraction at First Sight, What Dayton and Aaron Really Demonstrated Almost 40 Years Ago, a 2012 article by Katarzyna Suzuka. And she pointed out that some of the findings that Dunn and Arad created in subsequent experiments could not be replicated by both a 1979 study by Kendrick, Caldini, and Linder, mm-hmm. and a 1983 study by Riordan and Tatishi.
That's right. And so that's when we talk about studies and we talk about experiments, it's always helpful to know the context of it and to know whether or not the data could be duplicated. And so in this sense, it really does kind of cast a little bit of doubt over what was going on here. Also, you have to wonder about the person who was participating. Was that person a neophiliac, a type T personality who was open to more experiences? Would that person be more apt to try to pursue some sort of relationship or dating opening?
Yeah, I mean, you could even get into cultural differences. That first study was Canadian, so does that end up playing a role in subsequent studies that are not that don't involve Canadians or their cultural differences that play a role. And it also, in terms of applying that study to this people on a date at a movie theater scenario,
mm-hmm.
You have the added complexity of the individuals on the date are going to be stimulated and aroused by what they're watching, but they're also potentially going to be stimulated by each other. I mean, they're on a date, so they're thinking about this other person, they're looking at that other person, they're conceivably feeling some level of physical arousal just by being in their company. So you're having these two competing sets of stimuli. Maybe not competing, but complementary.
Which is really interesting when you stop to consider one study that had to do with products kind of hitching a ride on those feelings.
Oh, yes. This one's great because what do you do when you're at the movie theater, you're seeing this horror movie, and you don't have this other person to jump into the arms of, right?
You cling to whatever you're drinking or you're eating as
yes.
a source of comfort.
Yeah, and you go for the brand, right? You don't go for you don't go for Red Vine. You go for Twizzlers. you go for the good stuff, the strong stuff, the stuff you care about, the brand you can trust for all plastic candies.
Yeah, you don't go for, what is it, Hydroxy versus Oreos?
Yeah.
That one always troubled me, just the name.
Yeah, Hydrox sounds like the version of Oreos that Walter White cooks up in his lab beneath the chicken plant, right?
Yeah, never eat anything that Walter White makes. That's just a rule in life.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
There's a 2004 study in the Journal of Consumer Research that looks at this idea that when you don't have person-to-person support when you're experiencing something that's scary, that you will replace that person with something else, like a actual physical object. So they had a couple of studies, but in one, they had one in which participants were asked to drink the juice or this kind of juice during a movie, and they were asked to wait or given a choice to drink at leisure. Now, their choices were horror, action, or a documentary. And the study results showed that the most increase in emotional attachment to the juice in participants who viewed the horror movie and who were allowed to drink at leisure or asked to wait until the end of the movie. So again, we see some sort of emotional connection to that, which I have to say, I don't know if you've ever done this when you've watched something that, you know, a movie that was scary or just ramped up your sense of anticipation. And you just kept going for the popcorn over and over again, because as we've talked about before, food is a source of comfort.
Yeah. And then when you're the popcorn, of course, you're eating it, and you're getting the salty, the sweet, the fat. I mean, it's in itself kind of a super normal stimuli as well. But yeah, I've certainly had that experience where you're watching the film and you just can't stop eating the popcorn.
Now, this study was conducted because there's this idea that you could have negative associations with brands and then you would turn away from them. At least this is what a lot of industries like Coke and other manufacturers of snack food thought. And so this experiment was interesting because it kind of turns that paradigm on its head. And if you're interested in learning more about it, the study is called The Impact of Fear on Emotional Brand Attachment. It was published in the June 2014 edition of Journal of Consumer Research.
I feel like I can definitely relate to that, because just Monday evening, I watched the 1979 horror film Tourist Trap. And for you film junkies, it starred Chuck Connors, you know, the rifleman from the old TV shows, as this kind of like psychic hillbilly mannequin obsessed.
Did you say mannequin obsessed?
Oh yeah, it has creepy mannequins in it and psychic abilities and fear of rural folk and old versus young.
Is this True Detective?
No, it's not so elegantly crafted. It's not a good movie, but it has some scenes that are legitimately creepy. And it has a scene where there's a Dr. Pepper machine in the background while our lone survivor girl tries to figure out what she's going to do. And it's just, you know, she's terrified and she's standing around and there's the Dr. Pepper logo. And at the time I was just kind of like, that's kind of weird. Yeah. The Dr. Pepper machine's there. I wonder what they thought about it. If anyone in the corporate level ever knew that their logo showed up in this film. But even still, thinking back on it, the other evening, I started thinking about Dr. Pepper. I started thinking about how it tastes. And even though I haven't consumed a Dr. Pepper in years and years and years, I did kind of want one in that moment.
Do you know what goes with it really well?
What's that?
Cheetos. Oh. I kid you not. My 16-year-old self will tell you that that's a beautiful flavor combination.
Okay. Well, I'll have to keep that in mind for next time for sure.
Okay. We talk about these things and then often we try to find examples in nature. And lo and behold, we did find an example of perhaps the scary movie effect with Australian birds.
Yes, particularly we're talking about splendid fairy wrens, which sounds pretty fantastic.
Doesn't
but this is an actual thing. Particularly the male splendid fairy wrens are a sexually promiscuous small bird, and they are known to kind of piggyback onto the calls of predatory birds, such as butcher birds. So the butcher bird lets out its predatory cry. And any potential prey in the area are instantly going to go, ooh, you know, that's a bad sign. That's the sound of something that could potentially kill me. That is a scary bird call. What does the male fairy wren do? He tacks on his own little love cry onto the end of the predator's cry.
Yeah, and in fact, he does it so quickly that it is sometimes considered a duet. At least vocally, it sounds like that. Mm-hmm. And this is called vocal hitchhiking. And by the way, I love the fact that this predator bird is called a butcher bird.
Oh,
and I can't help but think of like Bill the Butcher with his glorious mustache. So that's what I think of flying around out there.
Well, it fits perfectly, right? There's a butcher. There's a horrible killer in our midst, and it's calling out to us. It's shrieking. And then here is the male of this species.
The splendid fairy wren.
Splendid fairy wren saying, hey, ladies.
Hey, ladies, what's going on?
Yeah.
And it is specifically, it's called a type 2 call that the splendid fairy wren makes, which is specifically a mating call. And that's really important. And they were out in the field. They did tons of painstaking research on this to figure this out. So essentially what they're doing at the very basis here is trying to get the female's attention. And that is much easier done if it is preceded by this terrifying predator out there.
Indeed, it's almost sending that message. Life is horrible. Life is full of dangers. You could die Wouldn't you like to have a little comfort? Wouldn't you like to have a chance, maybe even to fulfill your genetic mission on this planet before you wind up in the belly of a butcher bird?
That's right. There's no time like the present to get it on, ladies. I think that's what they're saying. Now, lest you think that these male birds are competing for a Darwin Award out there in nature, it turns out that this singing after a predator call may actually be really safe. Male fairy wrens know where the predator is located, first of all, and he also knows that the predator isn't actively hunting at that moment, but is instead singing its heart out as if it were in the shower.
Oh, man. See, this makes me think of a perfect pitch for a horror movie. You have your basic slasher scenario, right?
Okay.
There's a slasher killer, and he pops up periodically at some lake camp or similar haunts.
Right.
But then you also have male humans that are essentially like our splendid fairy wren, who realize, hey, if they want to have a shot at the ladies, they had best go hang out in regions where the slasher killer happens to frequent. I don't know.
I mean, that's it's an idea here.
Yeah, it would be a nice reveal because again, we love the horror movies where all the men are horrible. So there would be that reveal where you realize the male characters who seem like they're trying to help our female, they're basically just looking to score, and they're using the presence of the slasher killer to their advantage.
Cads.
Yeah.
All of you. All right. This is the single case that they've found so far in Nature, but the researchers, and this is headed up by Emma Greig, she's a PhD, and she's one of the first authors of the study. They suspect that there are more cases like this out in nature. They just have to find them. And if you're interested, the study is called Danger May Enhance Communication. Predator calls alert females to male displays.
All right, so there you have it. Now, based on everything we've told you here, I feel like this would be a good time for us to give you some recommendations if you're looking for a manipulative dating movie experience.
Mm-hmm.
You want to watch some horror that would perhaps have some romantic results, though we by no means guarantee results.
Yeah, if you want to try to scare the pants, literally, off of your date, no matter what their gender. Okay, my picks.
Uh-huh.
Love Actually.
What?
The Notebook.
What?
On Golden Pond. Chilling.
Those are not horror movies, Julie. I've seen none of them. No, I take that back. I have seen Love Actually. And it was a horrifying experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's your rationale, that this will frighten people into
Jane Fonda is just terrifying. She is. She's an excellent actor. Great in Barbarella, but terrifying in On Golden Pond. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Well, my recommendations would be High Tension, 2003 horror film from Alexandra Aja. And this one is interesting. It has a twist that doesn't quite hold up to repeat viewings, but stylishly well done, and it plays with gender expectations in kind of a unique way. And another film that came to mind, and this was based on the fact that in Serena Whitney's article for Killer Film, she mentioned that at times, like a horror movie can be almost like going to a funeral. So afterwards, mm-hmm. you're so disturbed that you kind of have to cling to another person. Like you need real human contact.
Comfort. Yeah,
you almost have to mourn for what has happened, which would probably indicate either a really good or a really bad movie watching experience. So Oculus comes to mind, 2013 film about a haunted mirror from Mike Flanagan.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody loved it. I thought it was really well crafted. I thought it did some wonderful stuff with the way memory works and taking the past and the present and mixing them together. But it ultimately leaves you in such a devastated place because you care about the characters and all of these horror movie events happen. And at the end, you kind of need somebody to hold.
Indeed. I do stand by The Beast, I got to say, the 70s French one. It's campy. And if anybody goes out and they see it on my recommendation, I apologize in advance for the Beast penis. That's all I have to say.
So warning, may contain Beast penis. Gotcha.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, as always, you can find this and all the other podcast episodes on our homepage, stufftoblowyourmind.com. And I'll try to include links to related content on that landing page for this episode, as well as some outgoing links to some of these resources that Julie made mention of. Also on the website, you can find all of our videos, our blog posts, and links out to our various social media accounts.
All right, and if you have any thoughts brewing about this, if you think this is just some sort of heteronorm hooey, a relic of the past, or if you think there's a basis to it, let us know. You can do that by emailing us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.